there, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Here today with Dr. Jeremy Spiegel. Jeremy, welcome back.
Thank you.
We're here to bring you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. But last Tuesday's program, where we talked about elder abuse, seems to have shaken the timbers a little bit. So it put me to work. It put me to work looking at what's happening to our generation of elders. And as you know, most people here, WBAI was started right around the baby boom. And most of our audience, a lot of our audience are in their 60s and 70s. And, of course, a lot younger people, too. But we've got a group of people, from what I've seen, who are real fighters. And I decided that there was going to be probably an elder insurgency happening from this army of elders. Because for a while, the elders used to be treated like they had no voice. And they did have no voice. That was the idea. The idea was you get older, you sit in the corner, you take care of the kids, you don't have a voice. Now, there's an army out there. Now there's a gang out there. Now there's a group of people big enough to make every politician bend his ways so as to make sure you could say, you know, we're not threatening Medicare and we're not threatening things like that. But we've got to look at – so we have to look at this, but I want you to look at it from a very interesting place. As you know, here on The Positive Mind, we wouldn't just be saying be kind to the elderly. It's not me. Some people don't deserve being kind to because they're mean. You know, don't be kind to mean people. I mean, you can be kind to mean people, but don't be unkind. But don't, you know, necessarily get too close to abuse. So listen to this. I've always enjoyed wine. My family made wine. I love the taste of good wine. I don't like the taste of poor wine. It was in my blood. But I noticed recently, 4 ounces. 4 ounces, half a glass. And I was in an altered state of mind. I just felt my mind slip. And I said, hey, my mind feels sloppy. My speech even got a little sloppy. Now, I can't say I was drunk. I wasn't. But I did notice the incredible effect that just 4 ounces of alcohol had, 4 ounces of wine had, on my disposition. So I said, I don't want to feel that way. So what I do is I don't avoid wine completely. I taste, but I don't swallow. You know, it's like a taste is great. It teaches me a lot. But this brought me to a little research. What happens to people who drink alcohol? And what is this frequency I've been finding of alcohol among the elderly? And why? Well, I think about it. Okay, you're sitting around the house. Your kids are out. You've done your job. What do you got to do? You have this new sensitivity to alcohol. Well, gee, why not have a drink? A little more research than that, and we find out an article from Australia that there is a growing population of heroin addicts among the elderly in Australia. Heroin addicts? What do you mean elder heroin addicts? How could there be? How could they be? What do they do? Stand on a street corner? Score a nickel bag or something? What do you do? Well, no, there's a high incidence in Australia. What's the incidence in Australia?
Well, it's on the rise, certainly, and it's shocking because these people, this growing generation of what you might call invisible addicts, these are people that you wouldn't necessarily suspect had an addiction, and of all things, to heroin.
Yeah, now, you're an addiction specialist, right? You were working up at the hospital. It was one of the things you were doing as well,
yes.
And you had to deal with... In dealing both with the prison and the hospital,
yes,
you
indeed.
Deal with addiction all the time.
Yes, indeed. Absolutely. And there are people who you know have been using for decades, but there are also this other group.
This new group
that the onset is late. It's late in their life.
So starting in your 60s, your kids leave home, you know, and you're sitting around the house and you decide a little alcohol, a little alcohol, a little alcohol. Now, am I to begrudge you that? You want to sit home, get stoned, watch television? Fine. However, with it comes another bunch of other things that you don't like falling down,
mm-hmm.
like getting hurt, like being isolated, by being confused in your mind, which you may or may not like. Again, when we were kids, we took so many things, we wanted to get confused. So maybe it's your right as an adult to allow yourself to get confused all over again. Maybe that's a good state of mind.
Is it your right to break a hip?
Sure, as long as it's not yours. No. Is it your right? Is it your right to break a hip if you fall down? Of course it is. Yeah. Of course it's your right to damage your own body. It's your right even to shorten your life. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that comorbidity thing just for a moment.
Oh, yeah, the constricted morbidity.
Yeah, what is that?
Or compressed morbidity. This is what Sherwin Nuland describes. It's basically this idea that the hope is that the gerontologists, the people who treat the elderly, will help you not so much live forever. That's not possible quite yet, I guess. But rather that you would live well and robustly until the 11th hour, at which point then at least there's a quick deterioration and then you're gone.
So it's almost like, you know you have some problems wrong with you, you know, but they say to you, hey, if you got to take a lot of steroids, take a lot of steroids so you'll feel better, right? And at least feel better for a period of your life until you get, and that's of course going to make you crash, of course it's going to make you degenerate quicker, of course it's going to steal things from you, but at least you won't be as miserable in that slow degeneration.
Yeah. I mean, again, there are certain situations where there are degenerative processes we have that may take years. And this is the idea that when we can get to the point where we can help people live as robustly as possible until that the end, the short end. So basically a deterioration of a year as opposed to something that might be 5 or longer years with Alzheimer's or something like that. That's really the hope.
So your job as a psychiatrist, people come to you and they talk to you and you discover that they're using all kinds of things that may not be working for them in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as a physician, there's some Hippocratic part here that says you got to tell them don't do this and don't do that and be careful this and don't take this thing. But does that alter your perception at all to say, you know, hey, maybe this person's doing the best they can with what they have to be happier in the present?
What
kind of irresponsible medicine is that?
Yes. This is a beautiful point. This came up just yesterday, actually, and it comes up every week in my practice. This is the idea. The idea is that we are very absolute in medicine. We're yes and no. That's bad. Don't do it. If it's good for you, then you should be doing it. But then, of course, we learn later that great. Now that we've eaten all this fish, and then there's some issue with that. And so, ultimately, you realize that you have to take these things with a grain of salt. As a physician, being on the receiving end of a patient, maybe older, likes some wine in the evening, I don't have a knee-jerk response to any of this. I need to figure out what is this person's life about? What truly is the quantity? And so much quantity varies in an elderly person, as you just said earlier. Things are different. You have less blood flow to the liver, the kidneys. You drink something and you will get a higher blood level for any particular drink. So one beer might be have a significant impact on the person's sensorium, their perception, and their balance. If and add to that the fact that most elderly people take how many prescription medications on top of that. When you add these things together, you have what's called a synergy, and you have a strength there that could absolutely lead to this alarming statistic of falls in elderly patients. That's the leading cause, the most frequent reason for injury deaths in people 65 years and older.
Is falling down?
That's correct. Injury deaths.
Wow. We should fill your house with a waterbed. You know what I mean? Have mattresses everywhere. Just don't walk around without a place you can fall softly.
Yeah, well, the world is not a padded room, unfortunately.
No, but a lot of the falls happen at home.
Yes.
You know, the falls do happen at home, especially on small staircases and things like that. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. So this is what seems negative. See, now you take a man like me who's done psychotherapy for so many years, or like Jeremy, who's also consulted with people for many years. When the elderly are brought to us for depression, and somebody says, look, my father is so bent out of shape, you know, please do something for him. I have this in mind. Before the person walks in the office, I used to have, I don't have this anymore. I used to say to myself, well, they're probably going to need medications. I wonder what medications they're going to take. I wonder who I'm going to send them to for medication before they walk in. And then they walk in, and the person who walks in usually walks in shuffling their feet, and they have very little spirit, and they're depressed, just as he said. And as I listen, I find myself drifting, because people who are depressed of a certain age tend to repeat themselves. Their stories go on forever because they're trying to give you the full story, and they find it very important, but they rarely get a captive audience. They rarely get somebody who's willing to listen for so long, and they keep talking, and you're sitting there nodding and going, And at some point, a man like you, Jeremy, you know, 40s and excited as a practitioner.
Yes.
You want to say, come on, let's do something vibrant here. Let's get something moving. You must get bored.
Well, I wouldn't readily admit it, but I can tell you that, indeed, you're right about this. I mean, the truth is, for me personally, there is something that is less intellectually satisfying with the types of problems that the elderly face. This is not a great advertisement for my, you know, practice with elderly patients. But what I mean by this,
you know what it's an advertisement for?
Tell me.
All of your practice and your honesty. You know,
thank
the
you.
Fact that you're an honest man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Go ahead.
Well, you know, look. I think even if someone's 20 and somebody is repeats themselves, then maybe you know, it's not as interesting as
and
when
it's
they
not
don't,
for me. I mean, of course, then it becomes how intellectually can I get through this? But the reason I don't like doing psychotherapy anymore and I just do consultations is because that, oh, my boyfriend, he said, which is the majority of the things that people want to bring in. Mm-hmm. And then you have to kind of weave through that to who you are from what the person keeps telling you.
Yeah.
But there are times when you just can't interrupt someone, and that's tedious stuff.
Yeah. I like to hear about the relationships. But on this topic, I would tell you that, you know, what are the complaints? What are the problems that come? And granted, I'm not a gerontologist. I'm a general adult psychiatrist. So what my intellectual interest is, you know, may differ from, say, you know, a primary care physician.
Well, what's a gerontologist going to do? He's going to tell you to join a gang. He's going to say,
go
get into a group of some kind, go to a club, go be with other people, join a gang. Be careful with your medications.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to help you line them up, get a medication pill carrier,
right.
And be clean. Wash your body and get somebody to wash your body and get help.
Mm.
That's what they're basically going to say. That's the formula.
Yeah.
But what if you don't want help? What if you don't want anybody else touching you? What if you don't even feel like taking a bath? Imagine the fact that you got to be 80 years old and you said, I don't have to bathe no more. All right, for you.
Mm.
That's fine by me.
Mm.
You know, meet me in open spaces. I'm happy to meet with you. And I think what I want people to do is take a look at the fact that many elders are asserting themselves in a different kind of way,
yeah.
A very different kind of way, and that we should attend because there is high intellect. There is interesting things that we could learn.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what we're really talking about is a kind of adversity that's oftentimes physical. And you have somebody who is not well, and in addition to the physical, social, who died? Somebody died, someone very, very close to them, or changes in their self-esteem after working for decades. And they've been pushed out of their company or because there's another generation of people who need work or have a different kind of ideas or that kind of thing. And so you have this person with much more free time than they ever had before. It is difficult to initiate friendships in the way that you could when maybe you weren't in such chronic pain, say, or that you look different. What then? I mean, what then for this patient or this person? What I can tell you is that I don't think anybody actually finds those physical problems, say, fascinating intellectually. But when you start to listen to the person's story, you realize that this person before me has lived and saw things with their eyes. As you look into their eyes, you realize they have seen things you really may not even have a kind of vocabulary for. It was a different generation. Maybe you were not born then. Therein lies the appreciation for someone who made it that far. Because it's quite a trick to live into your 60s, 70s, and so forth.
And it's kind of fascinating because if we learned to ask, and of course I'm going to get some people on air who will have lived that long and will talk about it, but if you learn to ask, like in business, for example, what have you learned in business? What have you seen? What do you understand about employing people? If you ask an elder who has been an employer for a number of years or a manager, he'll tell you about how you don't confront people directly. He'll tell you about how you have to be careful that everything gets back to you. You have to be, and he teach you managerial skills that nobody would believe are effective today. We'll say, oh no, now we have computers and stuff. Mm-hmm. But there are skills that are available, and there are agencies that provide these people who are willing to advise to businesses that no one takes advantage of.
Yeah.
People say, oh no, we don't need that. You know, we're young. And we're vibrant, mm-hmm. and we are upstarts, and we can make this, we'll shape our own world, and we won't use these old formulas.
Yeah.
But you're saying the same thing I'm saying. There's a combination of two here. This is Armand DeMille. We are talking about this group of elders as they are coming about, many more re-entering the workforce, some of them because the nest egg that they had put aside doesn't work as well. Housing market has fallen apart. Some going back to work, they'll take any job. It's fine. It's not demeaning to take a job for $10 an hour. Happy to take it. It's at least I feel like I'm a productive part of society. I'm doing something. I'm happy to do it. But then we have this other group of people who find themselves falling into more of a negative place. And just one article here from Monroe County, Pennsylvania, Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania, two sisters are facing drug charges for selling heroin to the elderly. That's it. Imagine two. The two sisters were 70 years old and 65 years old, and they were dealers, dealers of heroin to the elderly. So, I mean, there is a market out there of people. So let's move on to this idea of medication in the elderly.
Yes, well, this is the trick. This is the balancing act in terms of certain medications that you might be prescribed, say for sleeping pills or antidepressants, there are some choices that are better than others for elderly patients. It's, as an example, Prozac or fluoxetine is a very long-acting antidepressant, and so it hangs around in the body potentially for weeks after you take the pill. You might avoid that if you're prescribing to an elderly person. Maybe you want something like a Zoloft or Sertraline or a Celexa or Citalopram, which is shorter acting.
Now, why do we want shorter acting? Because longer acting drugs, why do they stay in the mainstream longer? First of all, I mean, I know they're looking at changing alcohol driving laws, mm-hmm. that if you're over a certain age, you should drink no more than, you know, the maximum should be one beer, you know, because you're going to be impaired. Because stuff goes through your system in a different way. Now, what is it about Prozac that stays in your system? And when it stays in your system, what's the problem with it?
Well, the problem is, often it's not so much Prozac itself as it is Prozac as one of possibly several central nervous system acting drugs. So several drugs that affect the brain and spinal cord. And so the idea there is that if something's in your system for a long time, even if you stop the drug, it's still there in a week or two. Meanwhile, the doctor has already switched you to something else or given you something for sleep, and then you happen to be at someone's bar mitzvah, and then you drank something. You get the idea that you have this sort of cumulative. You might have forgotten that you took it 2 weeks ago, but it's still there as present and may contribute, maybe a contributing factor to a fall or some change in your sensorium, change in your perception or your awareness. And you might get confused, that kind of thing. So that's really the worry here.
One of the questions I saw at the Mayo Clinic when I was visiting the Mayo Clinic, and they asked you what drugs had you taken, right? What medications had you taken? And they said, what medications have you taken over the last month? See, now I thought that was a very interesting question because you never see that on physicians' requests nowadays.
Right.
What have you taken over the last month? And then they run it through the drug interaction checker. Now, drug interaction checker, every adult should know that if you're going to take medications, you run them through drug interaction checkers. They have them on WebMD, MD, there's on a number of different sites. You put in the drug you're taking, and it'll tell you what the interaction is and how the interaction is severe, not severe, so on and so forth. So anything you take, aspirin, alcohol, cranberry juice, you throw in there and it tells you interactions. Like, for example, there are certain drugs you can't take grapefruit juice with. Right, grapefruit juice has a direct effect on certain other chemicals that makes it worse. Some of them make the drugs stronger, and some of them make them ineffective, and some of them make them just downright dangerous.
Mm. You know? Yeah, and so that in isolation is useful using that checker. It's even better when you can present this data to whoever you're working with. To put it into some perspective, there's some people who do confuse the word contraindication with something that's sort of otherwise advised, or there's an advisory, because there may be a benefit in certain cases having a drug-drug interaction that yields, say, a greater blood level if you're doing this strategically as a physician or as a provider. So, but I think it's a good screening tool, what you're saying.
So if it's important what you're saying, Doc, so when something potentiates something else,
mm-hmm.
it means it's making it more potent.
Yeah, that's
right?
Correct.
So they'll say to you, for example, this chemical potentiates caffeine.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning that if you take a cup of coffee, you're going to get twice the buzz than you would have gotten normally.
That's exactly right.
Which may be exactly what you want.
It may be. It may also be the diametric opposite. And so that is where you kind of finesse what you're giving to whom and how and why and your justification for using a medication with another one that we know has a drug-drug interaction.
We're going to be taking your calls about addiction and the elderly and care for the elderly at 212-209-2900 after our break, but we got a little more to go on this one. Let's take a look at these hormone ideas. You know, DHEA. Now, that's DHEA is a hormone that decreases with age. The anti-aging doctors claim that DHEA supplementation can reduce the effects of aging. It doesn't. An entire industry has been sold to sell human growth hormone as a cure. It's another fraud. And as you do research on these, you'll find that whoever sells them, of course, the is a representative, you know, whoever is the health doctor, he's going to say to you, take melatonin, take testosterone. You know, you should take testosterone if there's a drop in your testosterone. Take DHEA, take human growth hormone. I've watched enough people take human growth hormone and then have that develop into some kind of cerebral, I forgot what the problem was they wind up having, but some kind of tumors led directly from human growth hormone. So it is not as easy to take an aging body and throw in supplements that look like they were supplements that are in your body by taking them by mouth. Take them by mouth and swallow them, and that's it. Now you're taking too much vitamin C, too much vitamin B, so on and so forth. So it's not simple, and it's all theory. Keep in mind, it's all theory. So one of the things you can do is monitor what you do and how you feel and really become somewhat responsible for it if you want to. If not, just follow what everybody says and see what that's like and take it easy. Whatever you choose to do. Remember, this is your life. This is, nobody has the right to tell you what to do. We're concerned, you know, we're concerned if we have to take care of you. A lot of us are worried about the fact that if you do fall down, you know, there's going to be some kind of a problem that you're going to be, if are you going to be able to get help? Are you going to break something? Do we have to take care of you? Where's that list of the common things that happen? We have that here. The most common problems that people have to face, and especially related to drug abuse. You know, so falling down, bruising are signs of it. If you see bruising, you have that. Right here it is. Thank you. So memory trouble after having a drink or taking a medication. That's very important to watch. Loss of coordination, walking unsteadily, frequent falls, shifting of your feet when you walk. Changes in sleeping habits. There's always a problem. You know, part of the things they say when you don't sleep, as you get older, you tend to have this staying awake longer. If you're going to take medications to fall asleep, be real careful because they could hit you while you're walking. You know, that's another fall down thing. Unexplained bruises. And when you see unexplained bruises, usually the person will make up an excuse for it. Irritability, sadness, or depression. Unexplained chronic pain, wanting to stay alone most of the time. This kind of takes over after a while. I'd rather be alone. Yeah, I know I have options. Deciding not to bathe or keep clean. Having trouble concentrating. Difficulty staying in touch with family or friends. And lack of interest in the usual activities. You know, all of these things happen. The Center for Substance Abuse Treatment published this sign, and they said, you know, your elderly may be having a substance problem, a drug problem. Maybe you have to pay attention to it. But you have to be careful how you approach this. You can't go to your mother and say, Mom, you're drunk. You know, you're drinking too much. Keep in mind what many elders have to do. They can't even open a bottle. They have arthritis, and opening a bottle of wine is brutal. Those screw caps are brutal. You know, it's tough to have to get other people to do it for them. Open this for me and put it in smaller bottles. So for the people who are in trouble, it's good for us to be able to recognize that they are in trouble. The people who want to live their own life their way, it's good for us to respect it. And then the other group of people who are ready to help, participate, and be an active role, WBAI is the place where that could take place. I am pressing hard with the management to develop more resources for the elderly here through WBAI. And I want to hear your feedback on it. And you can send me that feedback on Facebook. And one mention to Facebook, there's been a lot of people using the Facebook as a chat site and really meaningless going back and forth. Please spare us that. Because even though I love your attention and I know you people are all good-hearted, hearing about your personal lives and minute details is not really what we want, unless you're doing introspection and you're saying something that may be of value to the other people. So please don't use it for that. Instead, use it for bringing our attention to stuff that we could pay attention to and do a program with. We're going to be back with you after a short, well, we're going to take a short break. Be back with you shortly. 212-209-2900.
Broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn.
Evan Rachel Wood, Blackbird. Hey. Here I am, Armand DeMille, with you with The Positive Mind and WBAI, sorry. Bringing new ideas, concepts, guests to help you lead a more positively life, positively minded life. Been focusing on the elderly, and some of the stuff about elderly and elderly medicine and elderly addiction. Watch this for addiction. We're going to talk a lot about it, and we're taking your calls at 212-209-2900. Now, Jeremy, who is with me, Jeremy Spiegel, Dr. Jeremy Spiegel. Jeremy, you were saying something about the benzos and things like that. Yes. Take us through this.
Well, the benzodiazepines are a class of medication that we use to treat anxiety, usually in the short term.
Is that like diazepam?
Exactly. Like Valium, like Xanax, Librium, Cirax, that kind of Clonopin, that sort of thing.
Is Clonopin different than the others?
Well, they all differ by how long they last in your system, and also the quickness of onset. So you have something like Valium, which is ultra fast onset, but yet it stays around a while. Other medications like Xanax, the onset's pretty quick, but also the offset is pretty quick. So sometimes with Xanax, for example, you get something called interdose withdrawal. So between doses, you're starting to feel, assuming you've been acclimated to this drug for a long time, you start to feel like your body is sort of craving it again because you're having true withdrawal symptoms between doses. It's so short acting. So there's a lot to consider. But one of the things that I find, this is a real balancing act because you have, on the one hand, people who you might be worried about. You might be worried that they will succumb to an addiction to pills, to the very treatments that is my charge to give them as a treater, a provider, doctor, physician, and to help them improve their lives. And yet at the same time, and assuming usually it's for anxiety or something like that, and yet at the same time, there are these other patients, other elders, who have not been prone to addiction that I am aware of, that are very reluctant to use the very treatment that really appears to be in their best interest to take. And again, the benzodiazepines typically are not something that you necessarily want to use first line for anxiety. For the elderly, at first blush, I mean, this is the worry is that this drug could accumulate and cause the falls and that sort of thing. It's a sedative.
Isn't Klonopin used a lot for people who are younger to sleep as a sleep medication?
It could be, yes. It could be. And indeed, there
but
are...
But so then could all the others.
Yeah. I mean, I've had people using Xanax for sleep. And does that make sense? Well, if they have initiatory insomnia and the problem is getting to sleep but not necessarily staying asleep, sometimes Xanax worked. There's even a special benzo called temazepam or Restoril, which is actually a benzodiazepine that was used for sleep exclusively, but not for anxiety.
Okay, so now you are reluctant to prescribe these because you know somebody could easily get addicted to them or habituated to them.
That's right. Now this. But I do use the benzos because they're very effective medications for anxiety, and they're used for other things as well. But the point is, if I have an elderly person with anxiety, I'm going to be very careful before I use benzodiazepines, but not just for its addictive potential, but because they're susceptible to CNS depression, so-called depression of the central nervous system, which basically means that it quiets things down. They're more passive, and they are more prone to succumb to falls and the sedating effects of these drugs.
Makes them less conscious, less aware, and it's kind of a mellow feeling.
Yeah.
Well, here's one that I've learned over the years. Over the years, I've noticed that people who are depressed have a tremendous aversion to anxiety. Hmm. It's almost like if you take away the depression, and with depression, it's like a cloak mm-hmm. for anxiety, you mm-hmm. see? Mm-hmm. So if a person gets cured of anxiety, they used to say, be careful not to treat somebody for depression so effectively that you remove it quickly because the person tries to kill themselves. Mm-hmm. That wasn't true, but the real statistic behind it was when you remove anxiety quickly, when you remove depression quickly, and there are some tricks for doing that without medication, the person says, I can't stand it, I want to kill myself, but they say the words. You see, they say the words, I want to kill myself. It's not that they will kill themselves. They want to end the anxiety. Mm. So anxiety is a much bigger threat than depression, it seems, to people.
Yeah.
Do you find that to be true?
Well, I think there's two responses. One is that if you've noticed, there are black box warnings on all antidepressants because they found that there is some truth to what you're saying. That somebody starts to feel better, and that's sort of they're at risk for having suicidal thinking, and that they could indeed act on it. So we have to be very, very cautious about prescribing anything. That all these drugs, even though we're so familiar with all of these drugs, even a Prozac, it's an oldie but and a goodie. These are not vitamins. We really have to take always a small dose of fear with any of these medicines, but it's good, a healthy caution. But the other thing is that if somebody tells me, listen, I'm really hesitant to use this. I'm anxious, and I'm hesitant to use this. I don't want to fall. I don't want to do this. You know, I respect that. I want to hear what's right for that person. If the anxiety becomes untenable, then we have a follow-up discussion about maybe now's the time to, you know, trust me on this, or take a little bit, and then we work together. What you were saying before about depression, well, depression and anxiety are, as I see it, they're just two ends of a spectrum. And so you have somebody who, say, is chronically anxious. They get so anxious, and there's all of that excitement physiologically, and what does it lead to? It leads to a kind of depression.
Sure.
And certainly the reverse is true. You start to lift the depression, a depression that they've kind of taken refuge in for some. I don't want to blame anybody, but I mean, there is a kind of, I think uh-huh. Depression exists for a reason.
It's like a blanket. It really is. It's like, what alternative do I have? And some people welcome their depression. Mm. Some people are happy to live with it. They don't want to have an alternative, and that's okay by me.
Yeah, and I think the want, how volitional that want is, how capital a W that is in want, I'm not exactly sure.
But there is free choice. You know, there is choice. And if a person says, I choose to be this way, I choose. I have so many parents, people dragging their parents in, dragging their kids in, and the kids say, no, I don't want to be I don't want to be on the Glee Club team, mm-hmm. right? And I want to sit with my computer. It's like there is something to it.
Yeah, well, no, there is. There's a number of people who tell me, have told me over the years, don't take this away from me right now.
Right.
I'm not ready for this to lift just yet. This is so, and I'm not suggesting that pathology is a pleasure or something, but indeed, you know, I always go through a mental checklist of how is this psychologically useful for this person right now in this particular situation. As heinous as it might be, that's at least a consideration. It's not necessarily driving my treatment recommendations, but it's something that I think about. And I think about how is this psychologically useful or meaningful in this person's life at this moment? What is it doing? How is it bending other people's reaction to them and so forth? And
Dr. Jeremy Spiegel, which leads to your book.
Oh, my book, yes. thank you.
Which leads to it. What's the title of the book?
Okay, the book is titled Art Healing. The subtitle is Visual Art for Emotional Insight uh-huh. and Well-Being. And
it's the use of visual art and you know, art in general as your way, your perception of working with that.
Exactly. And I don't think, I mean, I've never really been a one-trick pony about anything. So I think in writing this, I have really thought about what the patients that I've treated using I even hesitate to call it a methodology because it really isn't. There's some general guidelines, but at its core, it's this. In classic art therapy, you're asked to mold clay or paint something of some personal salience, and then you can talk about, say, your mother or somebody that was important to you. I'm suggesting that we're surrounded by art. You don't need to go through the motions. The art has been created. Find something that is personally salient, that maybe bothers you or that you like or any of the above. And how I've been using it in the practice is very sort of specifically with a particular person, if they want to do it and when they want to do it at the right time with the right work and so forth. So the book looks gorgeous. The designer did an amazing job, and the contemporary artists who gave me permission to reproduce their images. I am so grateful to all of those artists and the galleries downtown. So it is on Amazon. You have to. I will tell you this though. It is a little bit of a trick to find it. You'd have to put in art healing and then put my name in Spiegel, because at the moment that's how you can
art
find
healing
it.
Spiegel.
Art healing Spiegel.
Why don't we just attach it to my website as well?
Oh, beautiful. Thank
okay,
you.
Let's
Thank
do
you.
That. Armand DeMille here with you with the positive mind. Dr. Jeremy Spiegel, 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. Hi there. You're on the air. I know we've kept you waiting a long time. Michael, do we have any callers?
Oh, yeah, hi.
Hi there.
My name is Nora Marta, and I'm almost 70, and I just wanted to make a comment and then ask a question.
Sure.
I've been depressed in the past, and I think that sometimes depression is you have to be patient and wait it out. Sometimes it could be a loss of a job, of something that you see in the newspaper that bothers you, you know, you can't change, et cetera, et cetera. So I find that to wait it out. And then I also found that, well, I'm an RN, if people need medications, they should just take it for a short period of time, and once they feel better, they should go motorcycle riding. I don't know if you've seen motorcyclists. You come upon them and you see some of them are with white hair and then they have the biggest grin on their face. It's time to do something that you really love, you know, if it's art or whatever. And then the last thing, which I just wanted you to talk about, is the profit motive. I feel like I'm a very high vulnerable group because people will sell me drugs if they know that by this age I've accumulated some money and I have Medicare. And I think these people are like bottom feeders when they are selling illegal drugs to me, if it's illegal. And I feel very vulnerable because of it. And with the unemployment the way it is, and they haven't changed the drug laws, they haven't legalized drugs, which they really should. I feel very vulnerable. And I just wanted to hear your
reaction. Wait, you were saying
reaction.
Illegal drugs or legal drugs?
Legal drugs. Although I'm not too crazy about all the legal drugs they're pushing on us, but the illegal drugs. I feel that we're very vulnerable.
And of course, we're also watching the insurance companies are taking many of the drugs that are on the insurance company list and saying we no longer cover these.
Yes.
You know, and they're taking those down. And now people can get things that they need in the streets.
Exactly.
As opposed to getting, it's like there's another drugstore setting up,
you
know, in the streets. And they're not selling heroin and cocaine. They're selling things like Paxil.
And oxycodone.
And oxycodone, of course, which is the one that...
So political folks should just realize that we don't want to be a victim to the political situation in our aged state.
Have you done any... Is there any active part of you working at leading people or helping other people of your age group? I know the way you speak, you're the kind of person I want on this gang.
Oh, I do volunteer work, and I get a lot of pleasure out of it.
And where do you do this volunteer work?
I do work for IFCO Pastors for Peace.
Uh-huh.
I've been doing it for about 10 years.
You know, if you don't mind, I'm going to put together a group of people related to doing some of the ideas that you've been putting forth. You know, would you go through my website and find a way of contacting me?
Yes.
I would like to find a number of people of your age group who would like to get together to do some active work to help people who feel that there's nothing available out there.
And your website is?
ThePositiveMind.com.
.org?
.com.
.com. Okay. Good show.
Thank you. And Jeremy, anything you wanted to say?
Yeah, well, I think what you were saying a moment ago about wait it out with depression, I think for certain people with a mild to moderate depression, that would make a lot of sense. It really hinges on the severity of their symptoms. I mean, they're...
Okay, severity of symptoms includes can you function?
Mm-hmm.
Can you make your own bed? Can you get out of bed? Can you bathe yourself? You know, can you lift your head? That's severe. Depression could be I'm in a bad mood, I feel down, I feel sad.
Right.
And I think what the caller is saying is, hey, you'll get through the sadness.
Mm-hmm. You get through it.
When you can't sleep and you can't eat, right, then maybe look for help.
Exactly. And, you know, why do we confuse sadness with depression? It's interesting, too. Somebody is crying in someone's office. Is that person depressed? No, not necessarily. They're crying. I mean, you have to be very careful with what we pathologize. Set them down a kind of path or a cascade. So thank you for that.
Thank you
comment.
Very much.
212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. Hello there.
Hi, Armand. How are you?
Good.
Good. I wanted to ask about music therapy. I don't know if that was a topic you were talking about today, but it seems kind of related.
Uh-huh. It does seem, and what's your idea?
Well, I think sometimes a lot of older people, they, I'm not really sure what to say about it. I don't really have much experience.
Well, I've had a lot of experience in working with people, especially in my being exposed to a group of people who had dementia and Alzheimer's, and how when put together in a group and have learned instruments and learned how to just bang on a drum, it's kind of done wonders for keeping them their alertness and aliveness, not reversing Alzheimer's, but that. And then in general, trying to get somebody engaged in music is always a wonderful experience, always. However, there's this thing called energy, which as you get older and as you get feel a little more weak, you start to become judicious about the expenditure of your energy. And you start saying, I can't do that. I can't. And it's like that. You need somebody who's going to be there with you and say, oh, come on, we'll take this one step. We'll go to a Rolling Stones concert. You know what I mean? Let's go there. We're going to sit in the front row at the Rolling Stones concert. I'm getting us tickets. All right. That's one level of it. But you have to take the person there. You got to bring them to it. You got to take them dancing. You got to go with it. Because if you go based on this kind of retreating energy system, usually they don't have the response is negative because it requires too much energy. So passive listening doesn't do it. Passive listening, I believe, with some kind of active thing, either playing an instrument, dancing, moving, whatever it is, I think that makes all the difference. But I think your observation is correct, that music does belong in there. In fact, music is a wonderful tool.
I think so. I saw a lady, she must have been in her 80s. This was at an opera concert. And she was really moving her head like she was at a rock concert.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Like, really, it was great to see, you know? And, those finer things in life when you build those bonds with people, even though you don't know your audience members. But
I hear it really touched your heart, huh?
It did.
It's really nice. You know, it's another wonderful thing. If you ever see... you know the Jersey Boys that play on Broadway, if it's still there?
I have not seen it, no.
If you go there, it's people who are 60s, 70s, 80s, who were fans of the Jersey Boys, and they're bopping in the aisles. They're having such a good time. It's all white hair, and they're having a great time in the stands. Stuff does pull people together, and you sound like somebody who's very generous and very kind. I want to thank you very much for calling in.
Thank you for the show. It's great.
Oh, great. We're going to be doing more of this, of course. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends. And you could go to thepositivemind.com and take a look at the website. Or send me an email, armand@thepositivemind.com. Special thanks, Dr. Jeremy Spiegel. Back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m.